You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert. And I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert. And I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure. Because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show, because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of the Super Retriever Series Behind the Line podcast. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, David Hamilton, and my guest today is none other than Mike Gibson, the 2023 Super Retriever Series Crown Champion in the amateur division. Mike and his dog, Blaze, bring home the Crown Championship. It's Mike's fifth, and we're super excited to talk to him about bringing home the Crown Championship once again and his performance in Shreveport-Bossier City. But first, let's take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, Yukonuba. This episode of the Behind the Line podcast and the Super Retriever Series are brought to you by Yukonuba. If you want to get the most of your dog in your training sessions, you need nutrition that holds nothing back. Yukonuba's premium performance lineup is built with the nutrients the dogs need to help unleash their maximum potential. That starts with providing energy that matches their efforts, supporting optimal nutrient delivery, and supporting post-exercise recovery. To find out more, check out the Yukonuba premium performance lineup and find your dog's fuel at yukonubasportingdog.com. Like I said a moment ago, our guest today is none other than Mr. Mike Gibson. Mike is the 2023 Crown Champion in the amateur division. Mike and his dog Blaze bring home the Crown Championship, and it's Mike's fifth. So Mike, first of all, I guess I should say congratulations, sir, to you and your dog. Wonderful performance during that week down in Shreveport-Bossier City, Louisiana, just a few weeks ago.
Thank you, David. I appreciate that. And, appreciate you inviting me on to be your guest.
I think the last time I had you on was to talk about, you know, your dogs in the past. You'd previously won in 2009 with Shady, but 2015 with Jeter, and 19 and 21 with Trigg. And now you're back here with Blaze. And, you know, compared to some of the other dogs in the field, Blaze is a little bit younger. So coming into this crown, did you feel like you and Blaze had a really good opportunity to win this year, or were you just trying to get some experience and maybe win down the road?
Well, you know, I was trying to get some experience to win down the road, but at the same time, I trained every day with Blaze. I knew what his capabilities were. And, I knew if we, with a little bit of luck that we would have a chance to be in there at the end. And Blaze is really a really good young dog. And I just didn't expect this kind of a success at this age. But at the same time, I knew that he's had some performances where he's proven that he can really play with the big dogs.
Let's talk about his year coming into the crown. So you and Blaze, obviously you've been in this game a while now. I imagine at some point during the year you started to say, hey, you know, Blaze is really coming into his own and we're going to have a good shot there. Like you said, maybe we win, maybe we just get some experience for years down the road. But how did your 2023 year go leading up to the crown?
Well, it started off with our first couple of entries of not going so well. It really takes an experienced dog for the most part to do well in the SRS, because the things that the judges throw at you, it's not just marks and it's not just blinds. They are very, very creative at creating a lot of distractions to take away from those basic principles that we're trying to achieve. But and that's why it generally takes a little more of a seasoned dog to be able to handle all that. And then, at Habitat Flats in North Missouri in midsummer, I mean, Blaze was just fantastic. You know, not only did we win, but we had the best overall score, including the pros. And, you know, there was some of the biggest names in the game was up there to compete with. So, you know, at that point, it started proving that Blaze is starting to figure it out, and that Blaze is, I can start relying on him to give us that opportunity to do well in every event. And he pretty much did well. I ran him, I think, in a couple events after that. And we had a third place finish and just missed winning by 8 points, which was a really tight one. And earlier in the year, right off the bat, the very first event I run him in, we was down in Georgia, and he ran fantastic until the last couple of birds of the last series. I mean, we were right there with a chance to win it and just didn't get it done in the last series. So I knew he was capable. It's just a matter of a young dog. You expect a few little hiccups here and there. But the farther that the summer went on, and, I don't know whether it's just, him getting a little more experience, a little more exposure to the game, he just started getting better and better and better. So.
Once you knew he was qualified for the crown, does that change your training any? Because I guess my question is, are the conditions or the terrain different in the Shreveport area than back home for you in the Kansas and Missouri area?
Not really in this situation. Now, when we were in Huntsville, the terrain was a lot different, but Shreveport is fairly flat terrain, just like, much of what we have around here. So it wasn't much different. But it certainly does. The focus does shift once you're qualified to, for me anyway, I use a lot of time in the summertime, which is a lot of times the off season. I generally try to really, really analyze and self-critique what my dog's biggest weaknesses are. And I try to really point my finger at that and really try to work hard at getting better at that part of the game. And then, as you try to time everything just right to ramp things up in time to get ready for the big event like the crown. And, anytime you really isolate some things and really work on getting better at that, other parts of the game suffer. And so you really have to time things right and really start ramping them back up at the right time and really start trying to have their attitude, mental part of the game in the right frame of mind at the right time, too, because you can't just go in there with a lot of pressure and things like that. The mental psyche of the dog is just as important, if not more important, than the physical skills that they have. So, just try to time all that and ramp that up at just the right time.
Let's talk now about the crown itself. So you get there, it's a huge field this year. Series one is an AKC style hunt test. You and Blaze post a 74, which, if I'm looking at some of the scores, not the best score, but not the worst score either. So how are you feeling with that first test, and just talk us through your performance?
Well, I was disappointed in our run in that first one, but at the end of the day, we were about in the middle of the pack after the first series, and, we weren't way back, but I was frankly disappointed with how we handled that setup, and was certainly hoping to make up some ground as we moved on to the next series. So, the next series being a white coat setup is generally his strength. And so I was hoping that we could, make up some ground and start climbing up some spots. As you start eyeballing things, you want to be in that top 18 and really you want to be closer to that top 12 so that you can keep moving, climbing the ladder. But in the amateur field, much like the pro field, every single year, I think it just gets tougher and tougher and tougher. The dogs are better. There's more of them. The handlers are better and there's more of them. So, climbing the ladder is not always an easy thing to do. It's not ideal to be starting out in 15th, 18th place after the first series. I'd much rather be in the top five.
You said you were disappointed with y'all's performance. Was it more in your handling or more in Blaze's performance and picking up the birds?
I think it's in Blaze, both, to be honest with you. On the blind, we really racked up quite a few points on that blind. And that blind, I felt like he didn't give me some of the cast that I asked him to give me. And that really caused us to start off in a hole with having to come out of. He hit one of the marks really, really well. The other mark, he just missed by a few feet, but he didn't check up and dive in those cattails to get his bird, and caused me to have to handle again. But for the most part, it was he didn't carry some of the cast like I know he can normally run blinds with.
You mentioned that Series 2 was a field trial, and that's one of Blaze's strengths. So talk us through that test and your performance in Series 2 as well.
Well, once again, I was disappointed with how we came out. We did move up a few places in that series, but it wasn't necessarily because we really knocked it out of the park. And as most people would tell you, you know, we just missed by, a little bit of really having a great run. But I had to intervene again on a couple of the marks, and it really hurt our score. But he lined up well. He saw all the birds well. He really indicated to me that he knew where things were at. But at the end of the day, he just didn't quite finish. He got 90% of the way there in great shape, and then caved into a few of the factors. Once again, we didn't have a poor performance there, but we sure didn't have the kind of performance that I thought we could have.
74 in the first series, 73 in the second for a two series subtotal of 147. You make the cut. Like you said, you're not too far back, but you're not where you were wanting to be. Over in the open division, the pros, we had one of those situations where the dog that led from the beginning kind of led all the way through, right? And so you've got Carter Turner and Cappy who just started slaying it from the beginning. And then at that point, they've got a bullseye on their back and they're trying to, you know, just keep everybody behind them. And we've seen that both in the amateurs and in the open, where some years that the crown champion is the one that comes out, you know, kills series one and doesn't make any mistakes all the way through one through five. Other times you have a dog like what happened this year with you and Blaze, where you just kind of hang around, and then right when it's time to make a move, you make your move. After two series, were you even thinking at that point, like, I got a chance to even maybe win this, or am I just grateful that I've made the cut and, hey, let's see what we can do here?
Well, my thoughts were at the time just trying to improve to get into the top 12 to make it to that next series. Obviously, you can't win it if you can't stay alive and keep playing. And, my real goal at that point in time was to obviously do as well as we could possibly do, but also hoping that we would move into the top 12, but not only move in the top 12, but move a whole lot closer to the top six so that we have a little less ground to make up to get into the finals. So, we were just very fortunate that the further that the things went along, the better he seemed to get. And again, even as we got to the third round, in my opinion, you know, it was, there were some good things in there, but there was also, it was a mediocre round, you know, for us. It was not something that I know he's capable of doing better, but somehow, some way we kept climbing the ladder.
In your career, you've been in both scenarios, though. You've been the guy that's being chased, or in this case, you're the guy that's chasing a leader. Which do you prefer?
Oh, I would much rather have that bullseye on my back. You have a little more room for error. You get to watch everybody else run. You kind of know what you need to do, you know, and sometimes that has a, you know, I'm not one that really sits there and counts my score while I'm at the line. You know, I'm every single series, I am trying to complete the setup in the most efficient manner that we can possibly do it and let the judging be the judging. But when you have, you know, when you're sitting there in first or second place and everybody else is behind you, you get to watch them all run. And, you kind of know what you need to do up there. But when you're sitting back there a little bit further, you know, you really, really, really got to come in there and put pressure on yourself to just have a great run. And that puts pressure on other people to say, here they come. You know, we better be on top of our A game. So, but I would much rather be at the front of the pack than in the middle of the pack and trying to claw my way up.
This year, though, that's exactly what you did, right? You were in the middle of the pack trying to, like you said, make the cut from the 18 to the 12. We head to Series 3. It's a land and water hunt savvy test. For our listeners who maybe didn't see it live or haven't, you know, gone back and watched the live stream, can you just explain that test and what you were thinking as you're watching the test dog of, okay, what are the judges looking for here? What are they going to score me against? And what do I need to do with Blaze to make sure I come out of here with a good score?
Well, the judges did a great job of explaining things. It was a busy test with a couple of poison birds and some really tight corridors. I doubt that many people have run a blind where they had to run underneath a pavilion, you know, to get there. But we certainly all have run lots of blinds where we have corridors and we have goose decoys out there that we need to run between and things like that. I know that, you know, every one of us competing at that level have run, you know, 1,000 poison bird blinds, and some of them being right out there in the open where you have to run right past them. But, you know, it's like when it's on game day, the dogs are amped up a whole lot more than they are in training. And, you know, the poison bird ate a few people up and gave many, many others their hearts to skip some beats. So, you know, I was disappointed with the first blind, the land blind, and how many whistles it took us to get through that corridor and get under that pavilion and get that bird. I was relatively pleased with the water blind. He stayed in the water good. Gave me a little scare at the end as he turned towards the poison bird and wasn't too far from it. But fortunately, we got a good cast off of that and got back there and got the blind in good shape. So, you know, that really probably saved us. We had a very mediocre land blind, and I felt like we had a really pretty good water blind. But again, a busy test where, you know, you're having to remote send your dog. You know, you're having to walk away from your dog. You're having to get those initial casts. That's not just a blind. You know, it's you weren't standing beside your dog to send him on that land blind. You were having to be in a remote position and give them basically an overcast to get things going. And once again, our judges did a great job. It's not just a blind. There's many other factors in there that affect how you run that blind. You know, sometimes it's tough to prepare for all those things. I try my darndest to be as fundamentally sound as we can and hope that's good enough to handle all the traps and the tricks that's going to come your way.
We're talking with Mike Gibson, the 2023 Super Retriever Series Crown Champion. So far, we've heard Mike talk to us about the first three series, and as he said, he wasn't disappointed, but he wasn't super pleased in their performance. So if you didn't watch, you're probably wondering, well, how did they win? Well, they put up an amazing fourth series, and we're going to get to that in just 1 second, although we do want to take another quick second to thank our sponsor, Yukonuba. If you want to get everything your dog's got, you need nutrition that holds nothing back. To help unleash your dog's maximum potential, check out the Yukonuba Premium Performance lineup at yukonubasportingdog.com. So, Mike, back here with you now. You've talked us through the first three series. You've made the cut again. We're heading to the fourth series. The fourth series is kind of a hybrid field trial, hunt test. Just looking at the scores here of the, you know, the six dogs that made the finals in the fourth series, 62, 99, 65, 79, and then you and Blaze drop a 27 in that fourth series. So that's really the point where y'all came alive and people have to say, oh, wait, Mike's back. Mike may win a championship here. Mike's moved into position. Tell us about that fourth series.
Well, hit the first two marks really good. Didn't rack up many points on the first two marks. And, of course, the big money bird in that thing was that 309-yard retired gun out there. And I don't think that Blaze cheated the water back there. When you're down at the dog's eye level, I don't think the dog knows that there's that second piece of water back there. And, I let him roll, and he hunted around the gun station over there and worked his way over there to the bird. And, you know, on a field trial set up with a long retired gun, that's a very acceptable way to do things. And, you know, at that point, again, I knew that we had a good run there, and I knew that it was going to vault us up and give us a good chance to get into the finals. There were still several dogs to run that could have done the same thing and put us out. But I knew at that point in time that we were going to at least have an opportunity to be there and take a shot at it.
Coming out of the fourth series, you're in fifth, but there's not a lot of gap between you and first place. So Stuart Williams and Tex heading into that final have 230 points, or faults, as we call them here in the Super Retriever Series. Smokey and John Lamar, 248. Cash and Jason Flassiter, 258. Waylon and Ernie D'Antoni, 259. And then you and Blaze come in with a 276. So 46 points between you and first place. And they put up a heck of a test, which is what you want. You want enough meat on the test heading into Series 5, where any one of the six can win. if people haven't seen it, it was a crazy test. There was a poison bird. There was some decoys you had to go put back. There was a little mutt hut dog blind that your dog had to get in. There was a boat with two Bubba gunners, a lot of things that could distract the dog. So when you're watching that test dog, actually we had two there in the finals. Did you say, okay, there's enough here where if Blaze and I have a good day, we can win this thing?
Absolutely. I mean, I absolutely felt that way. You know, again, there was only, 40 some point gap between first place and fifth place at that point in time. And, there's a lot of opportunity to knock it out of the park, and there's a lot of opportunity to really get in a lot of trouble. And, I can't, the only thing I can control is what Blaze and I do. And, you know, what we had to do was go out there put up a really, really good run. And then whatever happens, happens. You know, wish no ill will on any of my fellow competitors. They're all great guys. They all train their tails off, and they're all very capable of winning that thing. And, you know, you probably could have run that thing on six different weeks, and you may have gotten six different winners. But fortunately for us, God smiled on us, and it was our week. But, you know, Blaze, I was disappointed in the blind that we ran. We didn't blow a whistle till he almost got to those goose decoys. I mean, he took a perfect line all the way out there, and I kind of take a safety whistle just to make sure – you know, he stayed away from that poison bird, but yet went through the goose decoys. And then, he popped up back there on that back dike back there. And it just came so close to really nailing that blind back there. But he would start toward where the blind was, and he would peel back again. So it took me a few extra whistles to get him where I needed to get him to. But then when we came to the marks, and I really felt like, I really felt like most people was probably going to have difficult time with that blind. And the difference was going to be, if we could just really nail all those marks, we were going to be in a good position. And that's exactly what he did. He nailed all the marks. You know, we probably racked up very, very few points. And we may have gotten less than 10 points on all four of those marks combined, you know, I had a little bit of trouble lining him up for the left-hand bird. He kept wanting to barely peek to the right at that big white poison bird laying out there. And so, you know, I switched sides on him. I got on a different side to him to sort of block him off from that, and got him thinking about taking the correct line to that bird. And when I did, and he locked on right where I wanted him to run to, I knew that as soon as he got over that hump, he could see that bird and we'd be fine. And that's exactly what happened. So, a very busy test, so much fun to run those kind of tests like that, you know, to get up there and hold it all together, remember all the things that you have to do. And at the same time, you know, convey a composure to your dog that says, hey, we got this. Just stay with me here. We got this. And, you know, a funny story, David, I told Shannon this, I'm standing in the holding blind, you know, which is the on deck circle before my turn. And, you know, I'm always kind of petting Blaze and talking a little bit to him. And I looked down at him, but just right before they called me to the line, and I said, listen, buddy, we really, really, really need a good run here. You need to stay with me and pay attention, because we really need to knock this out of the park. And I swear to you, he looked up at me and winked with one eye, and inside I just chuckled, you know, and said, buddy, you know, you have no idea what we're in for here, you know. And he licked his chops. Blaze is one of these dogs, when he's looking where he's supposed to be looking and he knows he's got it, he'll lick his chops, you know. And after I chuckled and told him, buddy, you have no idea what we're in for, he licked his chops as if to say, I got this, let's go.
Such a great story. So it sounds like he knew right there, like, hey, man, today's my day. Where, at what point in the test did you know it was his day? And you're like, okay, maybe the wink and the licking his chops. He wasn't getting ahead of himself there. He really was, you know, excited to play today.
No. Yeah, well, you know, to me inside, I was kind of, like I said, I was kind of chuckling, because it was his youth, you know, almost speaking out like, hey, I got this. And I'm saying to myself, buddy, I've been here a lot of times and you have no idea what we're in for, you know. But, you know, I felt like, I really felt like when he got that right-hand mark, when he got the right-hand mark out there in good shape, that, he was going to, he was going to complete things and do really well there. But and right off the bat, we got off to a great start. You know, you have to get the dog in the doggy blind, and you know, he was just steady as a rock in there. He never even so much as stuck one paw out there. I believe he saw every bird, and that's such a key in this thing. You know, I tell people all the time that's not really played this game, and they really have no idea how much communication is going on between handler and dog at that line. Because, you know, if you can't have the dogs in the right position with the right communication at the right time to see every mark that's thrown, it really makes you have an uphill battle to try to do well. So, you know, you really, really, really have to have a lot of communication and making sure that dog's in the right position to see every mark. Because if they can see every mark, you know, you've got a chance to really go out there and put down a good score.
I'm glad you talked about communication and seeing the marks, because I wanted to circle back to something you said a minute ago. On that left-hand bird, you said you changed sides on Blaze. Is that something that you've done on a regular basis in the past, or was that something that you don't normally do with Blaze? And were you worried of how he would respond to that, or did you know?
No.
Okay, if I switch sides, he knows I'm trying to pull him over this way as opposed to him maybe going that way.
Well, you know, Blaze is a two-sided healing dog, you know, and what that means is, you know, every mark we run, I'm either running him off the left side or right side. In other words, if the bird is thrown from left to right, he's on my right side. If the bird is thrown from right to left, he's on my left side. And what that becomes is just another cue, another form of communication that when the dog's memory gets fuzzy on something, that maybe I can help him out by having him healed on my left. At least he knows it's thrown to the left. So if he gets out there and finds the gun station, you know, it should serve as a cue to him that bird's on the left side of that gun station and not the right side. And, you know, that left-hand bird was thrown from left to right. It was thrown, you know, off the land and out into the water to the right. So I started off with him on my right side as, again, the way we train, it's a cue that bird is thrown left to right. But when he kept wanting to peek a little bit too far to the right before I sent him, I chose to step over him, and that made him be on my left side, which by doing that, I was able to change his thinking a little bit from going over that little hill and heading to the right to get that other bird. I think I sort of communicated to him with that we're not going to the right whatsoever here. We're staying to the left. And when I did that, he really locked on exactly where I wanted him to go. And so, you know, fortunately, when I touched him off, he took a perfect line and went straight over that rise. And when he did, you know, there's the bird visible as heck, and he went straight to it.
Another part of that test I wanted to talk to you about was over on that right side where they disappear for about 12 to 15 seconds. And so you're standing there at the line, and just because of the way that the land dips as it heads into that water, there's, you know, probably 10, 12, 15 seconds where your dog's swimming and you don't see them until they come out, you know, on the other side. What's going through your mind in that moment where you have no idea if your dog's still on the right line or not?
Well, I think what you're referring to there, David, is on the blind.
Correct.
You know, is on the blind, because when they go over that first dike and in between those two goose decoys, even if they're on a perfect line, they do disappear for several seconds. And those are very anxious moments, because when you're at the line, you know, 5 seconds, 6 seconds, 10 seconds, seems like it's 30 minutes when you don't know where they're going to pop up. They could be hugging the shoreline and be way around the pond to the left. They could be way around to the right. You just don't know where they're going to pop up at. So those are very anxious moments. And, you know, you have the whistle in your mouth and you have the air already filled in your lungs and ready to, at the right moment, as soon as you can see that dog, if you need to help them be somewhere different, you're ready to make that correction as soon as possible. And so, you know, that's exactly what Blaze did. He went out of sight. He did not take a perfect line. Otherwise, he would have stayed in the water a lot longer. I think he stayed in the water around the right edge for a little ways. And then that was extremely heavy vegetation out there on the right-hand side. So once they fight their way through that, you know, they could literally show up anywhere. And when they show up, if they're heading out of there to the right, you better be very quick with the whistle, because that is not the direction you want to be heading. If they come out of that very heavy cover and was heading to the left, then, you know, you can breathe a sigh of relief and let them roll a little bit. But you had better be there on your whistle with the air already filled in your lungs and ready to make that quick decision, because it's going to happen in an instant. And sometimes that's the difference of, you know, doing well and not doing well.
After you ran the test, you don't know, you know, in the other series, they tell the scores as the people can finish, as they complete the course. In the finals, they don't tell anybody's scores to the end. And then they tell everybody, you know, they count it down 6th, 5th, 4th, 3rd. How'd you feel? You like, what place do you think you in? Did you think you had won, or were you still sitting there going, okay, we may be first, we may be second? What's going through your mind?
Well, at the time I finished, you know, with being in 5th place, and the dog in front of me didn't get to complete the test, who had, you know, had to get a rerun. So really, I was really the first score that was going to be out there. But like I said earlier, I felt like by us picking up all 4 marks with virtually no issues whatsoever, that we certainly were going to have a chance to move up. You know, the dogs behind us to run were all so capable of just knocking that thing out of the park. You know, I've watched Jason, I've watched John Lamar, you know, I've watched Stewart, you know, I've watched those guys run. Ernie, you know, all of their dogs are very capable. They're very capable handlers of going out there and knocking it out of the park. But, you know, we had a long walk back to where our truck was at, and so I did not get to see the next dog run. I've only had to rely on what people told me went on, and people was telling me that you've moved up. You know, then I did get to see the top 3 dogs run. And when they started handling on marks, you know, most people had trouble with the blind. It was a very difficult blind. But when they started handling on marks, you know, I knew that we had opportunities to move up, because, you know, when you start handling on a mark, you're looking at probably a minimum of, you know, 25 to 27 points. That's if they just blow the whistle one time. And with only 40 some points being between me and first place, I knew that we had a chance. And then, you know, it just kept happening, and it kept happening, and it kept happening. And the more it kept happening, I thought, well, darn, we actually have a chance here. But and then, you know, when it came down to it there at the end, I'm still pinching myself to say I can't believe that we did this again.
What's it mean to you to win your 5th crown with your 3rd different dog? Actually, 4th different dog.
Yeah, it's actually my 4th different dog. And, you know, Shannon pointed out something that, you know, I've been the only one to win with, I've won with a black dog, a chocolate dog, and a yellow dog now. But, you know, I don't know, David, it's still, honestly, I still just pinch myself. I can't believe that, you know, because I'm not the only person out here that works hard at this. All those guys I know work their tails off at it. They have great animals, and some of them are very fortunate to live close to some top-notch pros to, you know, to be there and train with and help out. So it's, I just couldn't be more proud of my dogs and a Blaze at only being 4 years old. And, you know, just because he's won this year doesn't mean we'll ever get a chance to win it again. You know, I said that the very first crown I ever run was Shady in 2009, that, you know, I don't know if we'll ever get here again, but boy, I'm going to do everything in my power to be as prepared as I can possibly be and give us that chance, you know. And And that's the way I trained. I mean, we came home. I gave Blaze a couple of days off, and we were already back working on, you know, next year. And like I said, we had 2 or 3 series there where I wasn't particularly happy with, especially the blinds. And normally he runs blinds really, really well. But the preparation has already begun for next year. You know, he's a young dog. He's got a lot of improving to do still yet. And we're going to do everything in our power to continue to improve on that.
One thing I've wanted to ask you about was the morning of the finals. You told me an interesting fact, and I went back and looked, and I was like, you're absolutely right, that since they split off and had separate divisions in the amateur and a pro division in 2018, you and Ron Anderson are the only people to win, and you've alternated years. So Ron wins in 2018. You win in 2019 with Trigg. Ron wins in 2020. You win in 2021 with Trigg. Ron wins in 2022, and then you and Blaze won in 2023. Since you've won, have you talked to Ron, and what did he say to you? And have you also told him, hey, man, tag, you're it. 2024, you got to keep this going, bud.
Well, you know, I didn't realize that until Ron had told me that it was actually before the semifinals. It was actually at the conclusion of the semifinals in Series 4 there. And he said, Mike, you do know this is your year. And I said, Ron, what are you talking about? And he said, you know, you and I win every other year. And since I won last year, it's your turn. And I said, boy, Ron, I sure hope you're right, but we got some work to do, you know. And then when it was all over with and done, Ron had already went home, but he was sending congratulatory messages on the phone. And I told him, I said, Ron, I'm not even going to come back next year. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, because I have no chance. It's your turn. He said, ha ha. He goes, I bet that's not going to happen. So, but no, that's, you know, Ron's a great competitor. He's a great trainer. He's a good friend and has good dogs, and as well as, you know, a lot of these guys out here. And, you know, although, you know, in all honesty, David, you get in that position and you get there toward the end, and, you know, I know the hard work. I know that sacrifices by not only the handlers, but their families make to give them the time to go out and do what it takes to have dogs at that level. And then to come so close and not get it done. I mean, even though I'm thrilled for what we've accomplished, I truly mean this. There's a part of me that is just, it hurts for those other guys to not win, because I consider every one of those guys that was in those finals, you know, good friends. And, you know, for them to be so close but to not get it, I just hope that every one of those guys get their opportunity one day. I just hope it's when I'm not in the finals.
I understand that, man. You feel for them, but you're also the ultimate competitor yourself. Congrats again. One final question for you. Where are we going to see Blaze this year? How many SRS events are we going to see y'all compete in? We know you'll be back at the Crown as a Crown champion, but between now and the Crown Championship, where are we going to see you and Blaze, and what's your schedule look like for the year ahead?
Well, it's hard to tell right now because, you know, we're still setting events for next year, but, you know, we will try to run a lot of them within reason. And, you know, it's something we like to do. It's something that we look forward to doing. So I'll try to run as many as I possibly can. You know, when you go to some of these venues, you make a lot of good friends in those towns. And you know, so, you know, I love to go to as many of them as I can possibly go to. Within reason, but as you know, a guy that still has to work, I have a limited number of vacation days in a year's time. So you kind of have to pick and choose, you know, what you go to, and, you know, save some vacation time for family and as well as these things. So I don't run as many of them as I'd like to. One day when I can retire, I'll run the heck out of them, but we'll be as many of them as we can possibly get to.
Well, congratulations again to Mike Gibson and Blaze. Mike, best of luck to you next year, but again, congrats on winning the Crown Championship. Mike and Blaze, your 2023 Super Retriever Series Crown Champions in the amateur division, and this is Mike's fifth championship. We'll see if he can get a sixth one next year. Mike, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep-sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.